Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 16, 2017. Four unarmed civilians were gunned down in Lobono County.
We did not get a full report. Now we come with the people of the United Nations patrolling team. Then we went to the site and we get the correct information from the citizens.
And immigrants all over the United States go on strike today.
I want them to understand how the economy is going to be down. Who's going to run the restaurant? Who's going to work buzzer tables, like in the dishwasher? Some people, they think we come here to take their jobs. It is not true.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Lobono County say four civilians were killed by unknown gunmen on Monday. The county commissioner of Lobono says the four were gunned down not long after government soldiers were deployed to Lobono to enforce orders for pastoralists from Ball County to evacuate the area. Several clashes have occurred between farmers and pastoralists in Lobono in recent months. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Local leaders say they are not sure if the four officials were killed by the military or armed pastoralists. Lobono County Commissioner Gwarit Kose says, according to eyewitnesses, three men and one woman were shot dead in Gwadiang village just outside Lobono County.
We did not get a full report. Now we come with the people of the United Nations patrolling team. Then we went to the site and we get the correct information from the citizens.
Commissioner Kose says authorities are investigating the whereabouts of another man whom local residents report as missing. The local farming community has often clashed with the cattle keepers who settled in the area a couple of years ago. Commissioner Kose says the pastoralists have repeatedly been ordered to leave the area. Government spokesman Michael McQuay declined to comment on the killings, saying it is a security matter. South Sudanese military spokesman Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwong says he still has not received any information about the incident.
I'm not aware about that incident unless I can check.
Kose says Lobono is now calm but says the continued presence of pastoralists in the area could lead to more conflicts.
Since 2016, people are not cultivating well because when they cultivate, they come and eat all the crop. This is the problem.
Commissioner Kose says last August, local farmers and pastoralists clashed, leaving many homes destroyed and residents displaced. In 2015, President Salva Kiir ordered all pastoralists who had migrated from the Greater Upper Nile region into agricultural areas in Greater Equatoria to move back to their home territory immediately. But the vast majority of pastoralists have yet to leave the area. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
A new study by the Rights and Resources Institute reveals the main causes of land conflict in Africa can be found in competition for natural resources. The institute is a global coalition advocating for forest land and resource rights of indigenous people. VOA's Kim Lewis has the story from Washington.
The research was released at a recent event in Dakar, Senegal, that included leaders of three national land commissions from Kenya, Liberia, and Senegal. Also on hand were government officials, local community leaders, indigenous peoples organizations, and investment organizations. Andy White is coordinator of the Rights and Resources Institute. He was also one of the panelists who presented the conflict study.
I think one of the biggest findings was just the increase in conflict around land rights across Africa. We suspected that was true. We did not have the numbers to demonstrate the extent of conflicts and the nature of conflicts. So that was one of the most important findings. Another one was regarding the nature of conflicts, and that is the vast majority are around dislocation, relocation, eviction, rather than compensation. That finding was not a surprise to communities, but it was a surprise to investors and governments.
White said the surprise stems from the conventional thinking of investors who focus on how much money they have to pay those living on the land to get them to sell. However, the study found that many African landowners do not want to give up their land. Women owners in particular value their property and see it as part of their future. As a result, they are forcibly removed from their land rather than being compensated for it, causing conflict.
I think one of the reactions from civil society was that this report gives you more reason for the urgency that they've felt for governments to act and act more quickly. I think there's a general sense from civil society that it is a crisis. Governments are not acting fast enough in passing laws and implementing laws, and that there's a built-up frustration. And there's a real sense that if governments don't get on with it, there will be more conflict.
White emphasized that conflict causes political disruptions, the crossing of borders, refugees, and economic instability. He said African government leaders that attended the event agreed that there is a sense of urgency and land conflict is a problem that will require a consensus of all cross sectors to help solve. He said understanding African communities is the first step in trying to solve African land conflicts.
I've been surprised to see the emergence of some consensus, civil society, private sector leaders, investors, and then the government. One point of consensus, I think, that's emerging is the urgency of mapping customary land use. Most parts of Africa still don't know where communities historically live and how they use the land. Some 80% of the African continent, the landmass, has been customarily owned and used. Roughly 10% is now formally recognized as community land. That indicates a huge gap between the customary use and what's recognized. And so just getting a better sense of where communities are and how they use those lands is step number one.
White highlights there are a number of promising initiatives now underway that are helping communities to map their land, which in turn helps ease transactions with private investors and governments.
For example, we were in Cameroon visiting the Yele community in southern Cameroon. People that we used to call pygmies were supported by the Tenga facility to map their customary use of forest. And where they're mapping their rights, it was in a forest area that just several years ago had been given by the government of Cameroon to a rubber plantation. And the government of Cameroon had made the claim or asserted in the contract that the forest was empty. And, of course, it's not empty. And so these mapping tools are helping people. So that's a very big step forward.
White says the mapping of land is a huge step forward in resolving land conflicts because it gives indigenous people a voice, particularly in the negotiation process. African governments and investors attending the event in Dakar support mapping. Open dialogue and the inclusion of women were also topics that emerged as being part of the solution to land conflicts. White said there was a consensus among investors, governments, and local leaders that women should be a part of shaping the future of land rights and business models in Africa. I'm Kim Lewis, VOA News.
Migrants continue to make the dangerous journey from Libya to Italy, and many have died along the way. The European Border Control Agency, Frontex, says migrant deaths have reached record levels in 2016. The official figure for last year was nearly 4,600, but the actual number is probably much higher because of many unreported boat tragedies. Reporter Josephine McKinnon is following this and other developments regarding the migrant flows to Europe. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Joe Di Capua.
Well, this is a report, a risk analysis by Frontex, and they not only noted that migrant deaths have risen to a record level on the Mediterranean, but they're very concerned that the numbers this year, people ready to leave Libya for Italy, could be as high as last year, and that would be around 180,000 migrants in 2017. Frontex is not only concerned about the migrant deaths, the organisation says that smugglers may even be bringing about disasters and mass drownings because the rescue boats are so close to shore. They're pushing people out offshore, assuming that they're going to be rescued and not really caring if they are or they're not.
What is Frontex trying to do about this?
Well, Frontex has been working with individual governments to try and not only send more rescue ships close to Libya, but trying to support the Libyan Coast Guard so that it can do more of the work monitoring its own coastline. The Frontex report says smugglers have become more reckless and more bold in what they're doing and really pushing these boats right out there where they believe that the rescue boats are going to intercept. And the dangerous crossings on these overloaded vessels have been organised well in advance and are continuing to happen, as we know, through the winter months. And it seems that the search and rescue operations may unintentionally be helping these criminals to achieve their objectives and continue to run very successful criminal businesses by taking advantage of those migrants.
Now let's move on to another aspect of the migrant story. We hear that some mayors in southern Italy are not putting out the welcome mat for these migrants. Is that right?
That's right. Two towns in the Basilicata region, south of Naples, have tried to stop migrants from being located in their towns. One mayor of a town called Cepaloni said he would not accept migrants under any circumstances. Raffaele Scarinzi, the mayor of another town called Vitulano, has ordered bags of sand to be dumped in the streets to block any new arrivals from coming to his town. He says that he's currently housing 30 migrants and he doesn't want any more because he says there are not enough facilities. I've even seen some complaints in Lombardy, the area surrounding Milan, because the Italian government is trying to distribute more migrants across the country, and that area is complaining that it's already hosting more than 20,000 migrants in that region. So it's still a very big issue in Italy. It's going to become more of a political issue, particularly because the economy is very weak, unemployment is very high, and people are very threatened by the influx of migrants that we're seeing.
That's Josephine McKinnon speaking to VOA's Joe Di Capua from Rome. The Human Rights Office is appealing for $253 million to pay for projects to stop xenophobia, racial and religious discrimination from spreading around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
$253 million may sound like a lot of money, and the appeal is the most ambitious ever launched by the UN Human Rights Office. But this money represents only 3% of the overall UN budget. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the sum requested is only a pittance, considering human rights is one of the three pillars of the United Nations, along with peace and security. She tells VOA the world is in a perilous state and the situation of human rights globally is dire. She says conflicts have always existed, but that what is new and worrisome is the erosion of human rights values, laws, and principles that were put together after World War II.
There were human rights laws and principles that we took for granted, that states voluntarily signed on to, that are now being questioned, that are being reopened, and in some cases that are being overturned. This is really the worrying part of the state of the world's human rights today.
The agency's appeal comes at a time of great financial uncertainty. The United States has been the largest donor to the United Nations, as well as the OHCHR. The Trump administration, however, has indicated that it may cut funding to the UN. Shamdasani agrees this is of potential concern, but notes the United States has played a leadership role since the days of the League of Nations, and her office is counting on that role continuing.
Of course, recently there have been some alarming rhetoric and even some alarming steps that have been taken that appear to be causing an erosion of these values. However, at the same time, we've seen quite an inspirational groundswell of defense of human rights.
Shamdasani says the appeal will support hard-hitting investigations into rights violations committed in places such as Bangladesh, South Sudan, and Syria. She says money will be used to train government, judicial, and political officials about human rights principles. This, she adds, will help alleviate some of the suffering of thousands of people victimized by torture, arbitrary arrests, disappearances, and other abuse. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Do You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how mother-to-child program is faring. That story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are your goals for this year?
I need by the end of this year, 2017, that I should have a fridge and a cooker, because right now I use a hot plate.
My goal for this year, I need to study a lot of things which I don't achieve last year, and I need it to achieve this year. Like having a diploma, so I need to achieve.
I have a goal to go back to school. That is my number one goal that I would like to achieve if nothing comes on my way.
The year 2017, I would like to travel a lot, see different countries, see how different cultures are, so that I can get a broader perspective.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Immigrants in the in Washington metropolitan area have declared today day without an immigrant and plan not to show up for work today. The strike will affect all six locations of Bus Boys and Poets, a local restaurant chain founded by Iranian immigrant Andy Shalal. The chain is expected to lose tens of thousands of dollars today, but Shalal says he wants to send the message that immigrants from all over the world, that they contribute to society and boost the economy as well as the culture in America. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Thank you for calling Bus Boys and Poets on 14MB. This is Asia. How can I assist you?
It's a busy Wednesday evening at this Bus Boys and Poets location in Northwest Washington, D.C., one of six in the local restaurant chain in the D.C. metropolitan area. The phone keeps ringing, and the customers keep coming in. But on Thursday, in solidarity with the strike by immigrants waged against the Trump administration after the president ordered a travel ban on seven majority Muslim countries, restaurant owner and Iraqi immigrant Andy Shalal will keep the doors closed today because of immigration policies which he says don't make any sense.
We have a hostess that works here that sends money back to her children. She hasn't seen them in close to 10 years. Those are really terrible situations that we put people in. We need true immigration reform that takes into consideration the human element. Like, we should not separate a mother from her daughter for that long. We should not separate a husband from their wives. We should not separate families from each other. We shouldn't make them wait 10 to 20 years to get approval so they can come here. That doesn't make any sense.
Shalal says his chain makes anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 a day, depending on customer flow. Money he will lose today by staying closed. The restaurant is well known for its ambiance, soft lighting, large windows, comfortable couches, and rows of bookshelves, all of which help give the restaurant a welcoming vibe. Shalal, who ran unsuccessfully for mayor of the District of Columbia in 2014, says he wanted to create places where people feel welcome in all six communities where his restaurants are located. He says he worries that recent U.S. policies and a rise in political tension across the country will put immigrants at risk. Brenda Palma, an employee at Bus Boys and an immigrant from Guatemala, agrees. She says she is not convinced U.S. President Donald Trump will work for her best interest, despite immigrants' contributions to the United States.
You know, we pay taxes, we work hard, and I think, like, one day with immigrants, I want them to understand how the economy is going to be done. Who's going to run the restaurant? Who's going to work buzzer tables, like in the dishwasher? Some people, they think we come here to take their jobs. It is not true. It is opportunity to everybody who wants to work.
The Trump administration has played down criticism of recent executive orders. A federal three-judge panel recently ruled the Trump travel ban unconstitutional. President Trump has said repeatedly that he wants to get rid of illegal immigrants, and his executive orders are designed to keep Americans safe. Palma says the Trump administration policies are much more personal for her. She says her work at Busboys directly impacts her family at home in Guatemala.
I come from the very poor family, unfortunately, but we like to work hard. Even though my brothers work hard back home, but because my parents didn't have money to send us to the college, so it's not a way to have a very good job, like a lawyer or doctors, you know. And so you got to do something like maybe for $5 every day. You got to work like 10 hours for $5. And if you want to buy like a meat, it's like 1 pound of meat is like a $5. So it's not way them to, if we don't help them, it's not way them to have a decent life.
Palma says she hopes her teenage son sees the hard work she puts in each day and how her dedication to work pays off.
And he understands how work I've been working, maybe like 2 jobs without seeing him, because I had to work hard to support him, to support my family back home, and to support myself.
When the phone rings at Busboys and Poets, no one will be there to pick it up. Shalal says he's fine with that because he wants to send a strong message to President Trump that immigrants are good, hardworking people who make large contributions to the American society. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
9 countries where giving birth is dangerous for both mothers and their babies have decided to improve the odds of survival. VOA's Carol Pearson reports these countries, 2 in Asia and 7 in sub-Saharan Africa, have plans for improving care for pregnant women and their newborns, as well as upgrading health facilities where they give birth.
In the delivery room, this is the sound you want to hear. It means a baby can breathe. If fluid fills the baby's airway, trained staff can clear it and save a baby's life. In a healthcare facility with electricity and running water, doctors and trained attendants can give a woman a life-saving blood transfusion if she bleeds heavily after giving birth. They can also perform a cesarean section if needed, which can increase the chances of survival for both mother and infant. In some countries, hospitals don't always have electricity or running water, or enough trained midwives or nurses to save women and babies when things go wrong.
In the year 2016, we have almost 6 million children under the age of 5 years that lose their life. And also we have almost 300,000 women that lose their life due to complication of childbirth.
Dr. Flavia Bustreo spoke to VOA by Skype. She is leading a team at the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and 9 Asian and African countries to improve health care for mothers, infants, and children, to make sure every pregnant woman receives good care throughout her pregnancy, delivery, and post-pregnancy period, and that all babies get quality care before, during, and after birth. Bustreo says the risk is greatest for mothers around the time of delivery. For babies, the risk of dying is greatest in the first few days of life. Some of the work means convincing women to have their babies in a birthing facility. The countries involved will create their own plans to achieve these goals.
The dynamics that we are trying to create is to have the partners and players within each country to create their targets so that they own those targets and they are also responsible and accountable to their own population for delivery.
The goal is ultimately to end preventable deaths of mothers and babies. But first, the 9 countries aim to cut maternal and infant death in half within the next 5 years. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A teenager in northwestern Cameroon has become the first African to win Google's Global Youth Coding Challenge. The honor has drawn a global attention to the ongoing internet blackout in his hometown. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has more for VOA from Bamenda.
Njipatik Bus Tello Shop in Bamenda is buzzing with business and pride. His son, Collins, was recently named one of 34 grand prize winners in this year's Google Code In, a global challenge for young programmers. He used to punish his son for joking with the computer.
I was feeling that he is just spending time without doing house chores. At times, I used to seize my computer and lock it in the house, and I tell him not to use it anymore because I was believing that he's just spending time on that computer for nothing.
Nji Collins Ba has won a trip to Google headquarters in California this June with the other top finishers.
The only thing I want to say is focus on studies. Get to know more about the opportunities that are around you and go to sites which have real information about opportunities like this.
But that may be hard at the moment for his fellow students in Bamenda. In mid-January, the internet was cut to English-speaking parts of Cameroon amid ongoing unrest. Collins had to plead with his uncle for travel money so he could go to Bouda, a French-speaking town 30 kilometers away, to get online and complete. He had just a few days to complete 842 programming tasks. Many believed the government ordered the internet blackout, though there has been no official confirmation. Teachers and lawyers have been on strike in the English-speaking regions since November. They have been joined by activists calling for cessation. Some demonstrations have turned violent and dozens of people have been arrested. Officials say activists have been using social media to spread anti-government messages.
Nous voulons encourager l'utilisation des réseaux sociaux. Il faut une utilisation.
Cameroon's Minister of Post and Telecommunication, Libom Lilikeng, told VOA there has to be a responsible use of technology. She says although social networks provide lots of opportunities, they have noticed that many people use them for unhealthy purposes. African countries have been increasingly responding to unrest by cutting internet access. Uganda, Congo, and Mali are just a few other examples. Last week, a UN rights expert called the internet blackout in parts of Cameroon an appalling violation of freedom of expression. Residents in affected areas say it is impacting the economy as money transfer services and ATMs are not working. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
We take you back to Juba with the song Koneta Nanbura by our famous musicians, the Freedom Boys. We have been listening to the Freedom Voice with the song Koneta Nanbora. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can be with us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mujikojana na kikiji Koneta Nanbora.